Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott review a Cote de Rhone from Domaine de la Solitude. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight I'm joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
And tonight we're doing weird voices, folks.
No, that's the voice I always do. It's just a little more animated tonight, folks, because it's the second episode, which means I've already have a bottle of wine in me, but that's okay. But on tonight's show, we have an interesting wine from an interesting place that we enjoy, Cote de Rhone. Actually, so Southern Rhone in France is where we're visiting today. And this is the Domaine de la Solitude Rouge, which, I mean, it's red. But Domaine de la Solitude is a classic, in my opinion. Some might vary, but a classic producer from Rhone. They make great Châteauneuf du Pape.
Yep.
And this is their Châteauneuf. Not their Châteauneuf. Did you buy the Châteauneuf?
They have a couple different Châteauneufs.
Oh, they do. They do.
And I've got two or three from them.
But this is their Cote de Rhone.
I've been getting these from Grain and Grape.
Strangely enough, I think you paid $9.19 for this.
Something like that.
Wine.com has it for $16 when you can buy it. It is 40% Grenache, 40% Syrah, and 10% Mourvèdre.
We love Mourvèdre.
We do. So it is a classic blend, but it would be because it has to go through the boards. Cote de Rhone, folks, baby version of Rhone. So is this a Vallage? I don't believe it is. This is not a Vallage. It's just Cote de Rhone, which is sad that you didn't bring us a Vallage. As a quick rehash of the way Southern Rhone works, you will have Cote de Rhone. Okay, that is a base wine where it's devolved because they have communes there. So it's a wide-ranging area. So it can be sourced from or grown in multiple different spots. Cote de Rhone Vallage narrows it, okay? So you're going to have from a certain set of communes. You're going to narrow it further. And then you're going to have, I wouldn't call it single vineyard wines, but you're going to have wines from certain communes. So you're going to have Cote de Rhone Vallage, and it's going to be, has a name next to it. It could be anything. I don't know. This is just, though, the wide-reaching Cote de Rhone. So it's going to be something that's really intended to be the basic entry-level wine.
It's not the same thing, but it's similar to a California designation. Not exactly, but kind of sort of.
More like North Coast.
Okay.
Sort of. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, in a certain... Well, California would be French.
For the area...
So we know it's...
It's the most general designation for the geographic region that encompasses Cote de Rhone.
True. You're right. And so that's what we are faced with today. Now, we've done Vallages in the show. I don't think we've really done any real elite Cote de Rhones. We haven't. Mm-hmm. We've done some more elite things from Languedoc, but not really Cote de Rhone. So tonight we're going to just do a basic one because Scott just said... I don't really feel like, being an overachiever. I just feel like doing something to the bare minimum. And that's fine. I'm fine with experiencing the bare minimum. I'm used to it because I have you as a co-host.
Oh, so, Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. Any response to that, Scott? You don't have a response, do you?
Chris Evans in my mind.
Why do you talk about him?
When I go to sleep.
He's an American hero.
I think I dream, a dream.
People just think you're singing that about yourself.
Except
you might be.
I'm not.
He's
singing about you, son.
He's far too young for you. Just to point that out. Everyone is. Even dead people are far too young for you. People that died in 1875.
What if they're freshly dead?
But that might be more your style. I don't know. Mean freshly dead as in buried or not quite dead or just on the slab?
Yeah, it's almost dead.
Still warm?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost.
I never really thought we'd make necrophilia jokes here on the Wine Vault, but apparently we have done that.
Well, you're talking about
we've pretty much just, well, that would be, I'm sure Deb sometimes feels that way about herself and, you know, doesn't know what to say. Jesus. But that's
such a bad man.
We've ran out of all the avenues. You made cancer jokes the last episode, so
no. I just you said she didn't know. I said a young lady in a ponytail, and then you made her bald with coming out of chemotherapy.
I know. I didn't say that. I was going to suggest she was a punk rocker, liberated, dick. So, folks, the Domaine de la Solitude, Côte d'Aron. We're going to drink this wine as soon as we come back here on the Wine Vault. Hey everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So, the Domaine de la Solitude, Côte d'Aron, from
Famille Lacan.
That's true. In France. Southern Rhone. So what are we expecting from this wine, Scott? And before we do that, though, I should read the review from this wine. There's one review.
One in you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That woman, that triple B that backstabs Rob the Wine Guy isn't on the show tonight. This is Wilfred Wong. And I did review this wine. And this is the lowest score I've ever seen from. I gave it 89 of my points. I've been called a compilation of all the Muppet characters in Sesame Street.
It's just horrible.
It's just not nice.
You shouldn't put up with
that. What about Fraggle Rock? Have you ever watched that? It's a great show.
No.
It kind of turns me on. I don't know why. You ever seen the Smurfs? Well, something about that show. Just
what about Papa Smurf?
I don't know. Can you tell a boy Smurf from a girl Smurf? How do you tell?
Wilford, does it matter?
Is there some sort of site you can go and look at that up? I'm kind of curious.
I'll bet you're curious.
What? Oh, never mind. I'll read the review. Damn these people. They put my diary on there again. Commentary. The 1998 Domaine, or 1998. That was a good year.
That was a good year.
I was 83 then. Yes. Scott was 91. The 2018, that's better. Domaine de la Solitude, Côte d'Aron, is bright and fresh with a pleasing softness on the palate. Tasting notes. Kind of tasty. Well, never mind. This wine shows flavors of boysenberries and earth. Serve it with cheese, pâté, and freshly baked bread. Okay.
Not stale bread.
And I just tasted this a few days ago on February 27th. Cheese, pate, and freshly baked bread.
Not stale bread.
No. No. Freshly baked bread.
Not moist bread.
No. Freshly baked bread. Why am I repeating myself, you dumbass?
Man. That was Wilford, folks.
It's another stunning performance.
He's the James Brown of the wine industry.
Sorry. No.
No, I'm not. Damn it.
Maybe.
At least Becky now knows I'm not making fun of certain cultures by the Wilfred Wong voice. And she says, it sounds like Gilbert Gottfried. Yes, it does, actually. Well, so what?
It's a voice.
It's a voice. It is a voice. I'm making fun of Wilford Wong.
It's mockery.
It is.
It's mockumentary.
He probably sounds like, "Hello, this is Wilford Wong."
No, I don't sound that way. I sound the other way. I wanted to have sex with that voice as soon as I heard it.
What?
What? Did I say something out loud again? I'm not supposed to.
You wanted sex with a voice?
What? I said that? What voice?
That's the question we all want to know.
Strange.
You want to have sex with your own voice?
Well, I do all the time. No one else will.
The Lord. Willie.
Yes. Say that again.
Willie.
It's starting to do something for me. Say it slower.
Willie.
What are you wearing? Normally I have to pay 99 cents per minute for this kind of treatment.
Lacy pink under things.
I just saw what you look like. I hope you're not wearing that. I want you to wear as many clothes as possible.
Lacy pink under things.
You're not sexually attractive. I'm sorry.
Damn it, Wilford. The nose. This is a wine show.
We just had sexual talk between you and Wilford Wong.
In pink undergarments.
Greek.
Very, very. A pungent nose. You know it's Cote d'Aron. There's a
candied rhubarb and Greek.
Like fenugreek?
Greek.
Oh, Greek.
I only say Greek because the last time they said Greek, it smelled like this. So. I don't know what Greek smells like. I just remember
it's Grenache. It's a Grenache nose.
It is a Grenache nose, yes. By the way, I've used Wilford's voice tonight too much. I'm losing my voice.
You've used his Wong too much?
That's right, too.
Don't tell people.
Not quite barnyard.
No, a little menthol.
But headed there.
It's got a funk to it.
Very definite funk to it. Different than a Pinot funk, it's a Grenache funk.
Mm. It's simple and fresh, but it's not. It's nice. I mean, it's a short wine, but it has a wonderful expression of fruit and a little bit of minerality and earth, but a basic amount.
Yeah, the earth is
it's very pleasing.
Like damp forest soil, peaty.
But it's slightly peaty, but it's almost though, Scott. If you are if you like a little bit of something unique, this is a great way to kind of branch off into these kind of wines. This wine is. Because it is just so pure and upfront.
Yes.
And it exposes a lot of those fruit characteristics. A touch of mushroom, a touch of these things, mm-hmm. but a lovely, lovely Grenache fruit, you know, that's right there.
And almost like a backstrap of like, not quite tar, almost like.
True. Yeah.
Like rubber almost. Well, you know how you get like.
Well, no, I mean, you could a little vulcanized rubber.
Vulcanized slime. Rubber. Like it has that little.
Somewhere between tobacco and that. It's a little bit both. But yeah. No, that's a good. That yeah. Becky, I think, actually would find this to be appealing. Vulcanized rubber and slightly tarish.
Yeah.
Right on the finish, which I think comes from the oak. I think it has a suave licorice finish. There is a slight black licorice there. I don't know if it's suave, but still.
And there's another herb in there. Really dry.
Well, it's dry. You know what those
almost cloyingly dry.
That would be the opposite of dry.
But no, not cloying as in sweet, but it.
You know what that's great about this wine? You can draw air across it or quaff it. It's very similar mm-hmm. both ways. It exposes a lot of fruit no matter how you're drinking it. And it's not complicated, but it's almost like if you had like a house French red.
Yes.
How lovely this would be.
This is that. And it you know it's French, but yet at the same time it's a little the flavors are a little bigger than you would normally get from French.
Easier French.
It's a good call.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe you're not buying a ton of this. That would be a great pour for you guys.
Yeah.
You're drinking the Goats de Rome, which this is, or the Goats de Rio, anything with goats.
Arena.
Shit with goats in it. All you should be doing is buying this. Have 10 bottles of this. Blow through it. And you're going to enjoy every bottle of it. This is great for your guys' household. I mean, Deb would, I think, like this to a certain extent. I know you would like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Deb would drink it. I mean, she's drinking that other thing. She's going to like this. This would be appealing to people that like Tempranillo. It would be appealing to people like Grenache. It would be appealing, maybe even interesting to people that drink Zinfandel, even though the fruit's a little bit different. It's not as bright, but it's still, it has a nice fruit characteristic that is similar to a Zinfandel in that sense. It doesn't taste like a Zinfandel, but it comes across the same way.
For the price point, this is really well put together.
For what you're buying, that $10, $9.99 is really good. Yeah. At $15.99, it's a little much, but still. At $10, that's great. It's a great wine. I like it a lot. I would drink this any day of the week over Bogle Old Vines Inn or any of those other things I drink. No, seriously, I would. This is one of the better things you bought.
Adam just does.
It's
such
a good producer,
job.
Though. I mean, it's a solid product.
Yeah, and so for a French maker that, okay, maybe they're not the premium of premiums, but they're up there.
They're good.
They do a good job.
They're solid.
To have a bottle that's at this price point.
This is as good as Domaine de la Solitude, as good as Jagal or Bernard, any of those guys. I mean, I wouldn't call it like Donjon or Vieux Telegraph, but I mean, they cost a lot more than this. So, but no, they're a solid producer. For one, that you can distinguish the wines that they're making in the upper echelon. So you might have the same producer making a Chateauneuf, but then they have their second label or their other label that's doing Côte d'Aron aren't really related, and they don't carry the same name essentially.
Where here they,
yeah, do. Or they don't do both.
Right.
They either do a Chateauneuf and they don't do the lower levels, or they do the lower levels. That's what they focus on, and they don't do Chateauneuf. Or they just completely break it off. I mean, Pagal, they have a Côte d'Aron ish type thing. Beaucastel has a Côte d'Aron. It's 30, but I mean, I've had it on a couple occasions. It's good. Is it 30? No, but they have it. This wine, though, it's good winemaking, and it really is a good, you know, basic version of French wine. I mean, it's lovely, really.
It's so easy to pick the different things out.
It is. There aren't many things, but I almost respect it for that.
Yeah.
Its in simplicity makes it better.
This pungent nose is.
It helps that we like French wine, but still.
This isn't our wheelhouse.
Yeah. And the thing, though, is I think it was one of those wines that will show people what certain things from France taste like without overly burdening them with funk or minerality.
Right.
Or be too much, too French. You know, Bordeaux, different. Bordeaux's can be a lot more approachable for people. Some. Rhone, Not as much, because normally people don't on their everyday drink Grenache. They don't drink Syrah. They don't drink the grapes that are associated with the region.
Yeah, the Grenache can
drink,
be...
They drink Cabernet. They drink Merlot. They know those. I mean, they don't taste the same in France than they do in California, but it's still the same principle. I mean, you're not getting certain flavors that you get in other areas with these other grapes. So.
It just has that... It just in general, for many folks, that pungency that's about a Grenache... It's just not for a lot of people.
But Grenache isn't all that available. You don't walk in the store and have a Grenache section. I mean, We know it's contained in a lot of Spanish wines or French wines and whatnot. But for the most part, people don't know that. And they just buy it. I mean, even then, I mean, the Grenache, what Grenaches are they drinking?
Yeah, and
Viña Borja?
And the Spanish Grenaches, they are different. I think they are, in general, more approachable than the French Grenaches.
Yeah, but they don't really emulate. They don't really show what Grenache can do. I mean, if you're drinking Borsal, are you really drinking what Grenache can do? No.
No.
You know? You're not. This, though, I mean, it's only 40% though, Grenache. I mean, it's equal parts Grenache and Syrah. So, and I taste a lot of Syrah there. I mean, I taste elements of it. You know, I just recently had the Tensley from Santa Barbara in California.
Passed out.
I do
find. Did you have it?
What happens when you drink a whole damn bottle of Tensley? It had wonderful sweet blackberry, Scott. That's the thing. The sweet blackberry was an odd expression that we don't normally see because we drink shitty Syrahs normally. But still, it was such a wonderful expression of that. Where some of the Syrahs from like Washington, where you're doing like K, you're buying that kind of stuff. Those things can be kind of guttural expressions of hard, ugly oak. This wasn't ugly. Hmm. This was just delicious. And I did lamb chops with it. Not with mint, because I didn't buy mint, but still. I liked it the way I did it. It was lovely. Well,
it's lamb chops.
Made just right between medium and medium rare, somewhere in that, where it's all pink all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Just right. Perfect. And Bo chewed all in the bones. He's passed out, but. And I bought Becky a very, very thin, because she likes thin ribeyes.
Mm. No lamb.
I cooked hers. No, she didn't get it. I cooked hers for about 35 seconds aside. And that was it. Like, the grill was pegged out. It stops at 600. Mm. So, and the boys, I cut the last one up, just pieces of it. And I took it up and I gave each one of them a piece of lamb, because they all three... They didn't, and I said, what is it? And they guessed like 85 different things that was wrong. But they all have eaten lamb chops, and they love them. They love them. So
there's nothing like a little lamb chop.
And I'm grilling for Easter. Becky wants ribs.
Well, yeah.
But, I was there, and I was like, I could get a steak tonight, or I could get some lamb chops. Yeah. That was a giant eagle, so you know what you're going to get. I could get rotten meat. It's like, what do they do? Beat that with a hammer? What the fuck? I like how they have those bone and strips. And they look like they took a rototiller or someone had already chewed on the damn thing. And they put in the... It's like, fuck you guys. You know? It's like, really?
You can do those ribs. Maybe...
I haven't bought them yet. I don't know.
Maybe do them on the grill for a little while and finish them in the oven?
No, I would start them in the oven and finish them.
Other way around?
Yeah. But I really am not feeling it. Oh, well, that would be good, but at the same time, prime rib roasts are always prevalent around Easter, and that would be lovely on the grill. Just indirect. Sear it off, then indirect.
Okay.
That would be pretty good. Whoa, how do I have two glasses? Oh, I think I'm drinking your Cabernet. How did I get over here?
I don't know. That's a good question. I said it here.
I don't remember doing that. But then again, I'm a derelict. So, it was wine. I wanted to drink it. Who knows? So, folks, we're going to take a break. And then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. folks. So on tonight's potpourri, we are going to discuss a few varietals. And just in those varietals, what element sets a good wine apart from just your average? You know what I mean? Starting off, you know, how do you discern from just the run-of-the-mill Cabernet from that one that just has a little bit of specialness to it, or Zinfandel, or Pinot, or Merlot? But we'll stick to Zinfandel, Pinot, and Cabernet, since it's what we drink all the damn time.
Yeah.
Or we could do something crazy, but we won't. So for Cabernet, Scott, what would you say? That element that elevates a wine from... Oh, that's pretty good. I might buy that again. That's something else.
Well, with Cab, typically they're not the most complex things. So you want things that are detectable so that I can pick the fruit out, but it needs to be well integrated tannin. So it's how well everything goes together. Cabs typically have this part, this part, and this part, but how do they all go together? It's how they all go together that makes it to that next level. Not necessarily the top level, but it's got to be well balanced. Cab needs to be well balanced.
Harmonious.
Harmonious is another good word for that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as Scott said, there aren't many other things to say about that. I mean, in reality, a lot of wines can have a lot of tannin. They can have a big fruit component, but how does it all work together? I mean, the front and the back of a wine, okay, those are separated, but they need to, in some way, reflect one another. They need to work together to make a great product. It's like a painting. You don't look at the bottom of the painting. You look at the whole thing. What did it all do? I mean, because they didn't paint everything all at once. No, he's painted at the top. He painted at the left, the right. What did the whole thing produce?
And, you know, a good example, what makes Ars de Birke stand out for what it is? It's the balance. It's the integration. Mm-hmm. The as you said, how everything's harmonious.
Yeah, a wine that is so big on the front palate then just falls off. Well, that lacks balance. A wine that its fruit is constrained up front. And then it has this lengthy tannic finish. That wine is imbalanced. Now, we might enjoy one aspect over the other. And we might say, you know what, I really like that length at the finish. But if you're talking about getting to that next echelon of something special, it needs to balance out both sides.
Yep. And
a complete product.
Particularly in cabs. That's what makes them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've done episode after episode after episode trying to find the California designation cab that is worth a shit.
We haven't done that.
Haven't found it.
No. We were going to do that tonight. Then I went, no, let's just do this.
You know, that's what I bought the skinny girl for, because it's California designation.
We're going to do a diet episode, and we're going to get, you know what we can also get? Kim Crawford has a diet Sauvignon Blanc, because that's what you wanted. On to Zinfandel, Scott. Zinfandel. I mean, obviously, once again, being balanced matters in a Zinfandel. But for Zinfandel, you're looking for a wonderful big gob of fruit. You're looking for something that's just, it's going to be a little bit ostentatious.
And Zinfandel is, to some degree, the antithesis of the Cab Sauvignon, because you just take the different designations from California, and Zinfandel can be, what would you say, different things?
It can be, yeah. So, I mean, if you're if you have a mountain Napa Zin, that's you're going to drink that the same as you would a cab. You're going to
some degree, yeah.
You're going to experience, you're going to pair it the same way you would with a cab. It might have a little bit different flavor profile, but the size and the length and the overall structure of it, that's a big, ugly wine.
Yep. Well, then you've got, say, you know, and, you know, once upon a time, we didn't care much for Lodi, but when it comes to Zins, they're doing some okay things.
They're brambly and, you know, they're, you know, fun. So they're kind of plucky, like this wine is plucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, how many different Zinfandels does Turley make? You know, I mean, there's some that are more similar than dissimilar, but, you know, Amador.
Oh, yeah.
Paso.
Mm-hmm.
Sonoma. Napa. They're all different. They do different things. The Amador kind of port style Zin, as we call it. The Sonoma smooth operator.
Well, but Dry Creek can be peppery. But Scott, I'll point this out to you. Napa to Sonoma to Paso for Cabernet. I mean, Paso cabs, man. Yeah, they different. Aren't. I mean, they are. And recently I've actually had the, well, I don't know if you'd call it the unfortunate experience, but of drinking them. But some of their flag bearers, I mean, we've done with the J-Lore Hilltop, but the Triana. Triana, what I realize with Paso is they need food. If you don't drink them with food, the better ones, you're missing out. I mean, not to say that I would ever drink them, but the better ones taste like a bad version of something else that I'd rather drink. But nevertheless, Pasos are so much different than something from Napa. Napas can, especially when you start going up in the upper price ranges, Napas are a lot more rustic and of yesteryear. At least they should be. Heights is of yesteryear. You know, that's why I like it.
Yeah.
The ones that I like, anyway.
So back to your question, you know, I kind of dodged it. I talked about, you know, the different regions and why, you know, I essentially talked what we like about Zinfandel. It can be so many different things from different regions, but what makes a Zinfandel that next level?
Yeah. That was the question.
Yes. Typically for us, it's a combination of, and maybe it's either or, that texture versus drinkability. You know, we can kind of bandy, we could probably do a potpourri just on this, the Ravenswood County designation series, you know, which one was the best, which one had the better characteristics, but just that drinkability of Mendocino. Right, but the texture of Baron, the Turley mouthfeel, you know, it's just where you cross over from medium body to full bodied, and it's done with layer of dairy.
What Zins haven't we liked, and why didn't we like them? There's the other question.
Usually, because they've fallen short somewhere, they weren't true to the varietal.
Often, the problem with Zinfandel, if you're a jank producer, you have this perverted, you're using it as a name to sell things, and like a predator. I don't know what that is. It's mostly bug spray and excrement, but, you know, but...
I think some canola.
OZV.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just excrement. They skip the bug spray. You have that with Cabernet, I suppose, too. But what parts of Zinfandel have places done that we haven't liked, and that's the bigger question. And then you can get to the points that are important. Mouthfeel is important, but in reality, for me, does the fruit structure remind me of Zinfandel? Because I want Zinfandel. Because Zinfandel, in my opinion, I know that you scoff at this. But Zinfandel is not a classic varietal. It is not a wine that I could ever provide 100 of my points to. It doesn't have that ability as a varietal.
He's elitist.
No, it just doesn't. So, for me, does it remind... It's almost like home cooking. Not by my mother, but by me, perhaps.
How dare you.
Or Scott. I like Scott's cooking. There you go. Does that make you feel better?
Well... Yes.
I do like your cooking.
Hey, sometimes I get game.
No, you make good, you're a good cook. But stuff that we make that we enjoy, it's really bad though when you're like the stuff my grandmother that passed away, her noodles, okay? Those noodles always remind me of just home. Zinfandel, and I think the Triple B would probably say this about like Dry Creeks. it reminds her of wonderful experiences. Yeah. And it's almost like it's a comfort food wine. So Dry Creek Zinfandel, Segesio, those two grocery store level wines are kind of the comfort food of wines for me and also for Becky.
Yeah.
And she loves the spiciness of Dry Creek, as do I.
Yeah, that pepper finish.
Yeah, that's so good. In a Zinfandel, because that is the classic Zinfandel. You're looking for a bit of spice on there. Now, obviously, Zinfandel has ascended beyond that in certain areas with certain wineries. But classically, that's what you like.
Yeah.
But Dry Creek is a classic spot. But we've seen it treated so many different ways.
So the last one, Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir, yes.
For you.
Good segue, by the way.
What is it that takes Pinot Noir to that next level? Not just from being good, but to being really good.
There are two different ways you can go with that. One would be like Martin Ray's Sonoma Coast. It is vibrant. It is alive. But it never holds a weight on your palate. It can be lithy and can dance around. But it never weighs down your palate. It always just excites you. That's one way. For necessarily the inexpensive way. The other way, you're going to have a heavier wine as a Pinot, but you're going to experience all that earthy components, yeah. The mushroom.
I want that Pinot funk.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever you want to call it. That aspect is what you're going to be looking to kind of integrate it. Now, not all of those do that, and they're still good. You're still going to be looking for the je ne sais quoi of Pinot. I think I've referred to it as kind of like a mushroomy sour cherry, slightly, that's harmonious. That kind of thing, just that Pinot funk that just kind of, and that's a generic term, but that's what we call it. We don't know what it is, we just know when you taste it.
Yeah.
I want to find that through there. But with that, though, I look for, in Pinot, and more of a complexity, because really the body should be dialed back. You're not looking for something that's really heavy. You're looking for nuance, and that's what I want to find with my Pinot Noir.
Yeah,
I wanted to drink a Pinot Noir tonight, but we didn't. Well, next, yeah. Well, but I always look forward to drinking Pinot. I haven't drank a Pinot in a while because I haven't been eating things I would drink with Pinot, but still.
But the Pinot that is that upper echelon, has all those components.
It's
has
nuance.
That barnyard funk that we like.
Well, sometimes. Sometimes it can be minerality. Sometimes it can be
minerality.
Sometimes it could be somewhere in between.
But it's got that component in that complexity that you're talking about, mm-hmm. but subtle complexity typically.
Yeah. It isn't tied to weight. It's tied to nuance. And that's what I look for in a Pinot. So I judge it a little bit differently. Not to say that we don't look for nuance in the other ones, but quite frankly, those other ones are more of a palate experience in weight, density, and
Pinot
power.
Is about delicate nuances.
Yes, it is. It is. So.
Wow.
I know.
What a journey.
That was a lot, wasn't it?
I'm not sure we define the Zinfandel, what takes it to the great level. I think you gave a nice example with Dry Creek, but...
Well...
And I think it's more difficult because it can be so many different things.
It can be. The things that you don't want it to be, you don't want it to be insipid. You don't necessarily want it to be acidic, except if it's uber earth. But that's by soil. You don't want it to be spritzy. And also for Pinot Noirs, you don't want them to be spritzy either. But honestly, though, unless you just want to be a clown, there's so many good winemakers anymore.
Well, I know, yeah.
Back in the day, 20 years ago, half a damn Pinot Noirs you drink would be spritzy pieces of shit, even by good producers, because they just couldn't nail in the vintages. So Shakespearean Phil doesn't like Pinot because he was drinking A Bon Clément back in 1998 when it tasted like acid and fucking tin. You you couldn't find a good one. Now would feel like a Pinot Noir if he drank one, probably, but he won't. So
stubborn, that man.
Well, I mean, there's. I think I could blind taste him on some Pinots that we've had that he probably would be like, "Oh, that's really good. That's Pinot. Damn it! What did he? What did I blow his mind? Oh, Cederman. He blew his mind with Cederman, but
it happens.
You know. Yeah, it's true. So, folks, we're gonna take a break, and then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. Back, folks. So tonight we are listening to Mo Soul on Dish Network, and you know I've commented before. Some weeks when we do this, we'll have good songs. Tonight is not one of those songs.
So much.
Right now, the song or the artist—it's loosely, you know, the artist, the Stylistics. Any of you know Stylistics?
Oh yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, sure.
Well, this is their song, My Heart. Oh my gosh, it's like a Bee Gees knockoff.
Except they preceded the Bee Gees.
That's true. Can you imagine?
I don't know this song by the Stylistics.
You imagine somebody that is like rolling down through their, wherever they are, on the boulevard, playing this on their stereo, feeling like a badass. I mean,
well, it's just. They were young and in love, playing their 8-track.
Man.
Playing their 8-track, popping an 8-track.
That ain't love, man. That's just like.
No, it is love.
No, man. You don't feel that way. This is, you just don't feel that way. This, if you do, you take a pill for that. But, man.
Heart of the City here.
Stylistics.
KGBR.
And I apologize. It's not the Stylistics. They're just Stylistics.
On the Avenue.
Like,
You know it's in your heart.
I don't even know. What is the name of the band that doesn't have the in front of
My them? Heart by Stylistics.
Welcome, everybody. We're on the show tonight. We'll right it's Stylistics. Their big hit, My Heart.
Actually, it's not their big hit.
Do they have a big hit?
Oh, yeah. What's the Stylistics' big hit?
Nobody wants to know that.
Oh, no. You do.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
They don't have a hit. This is the only song they have. Mo Soul. It's playing by Mo Soul. I bet Color Me Bad listened to
Style. You Make Me Feel Brand New is the Stylistics.
I don't know that
You
song.
Make Me Feel Brand New. Yes, you know that.
Well, yes, I do.
Yeah,
I
it's
know
a great
it.
Song. Syncopated.
Sure.
A lot of their songs had syncopation.
The way you sang it, it just
you
reminded me of it.
You make me feel brand new.
Yeah, that's great.
It is.
Excellent. It is good. That's why I said that.
It's a great song.
It's okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, the Domaine de la Solitude, Côte d'Aron. Scott, what score do you have for us here?
You know, it's not spectacular. I want to go higher, but I'm not going to. I'm 87, and 87's a good wine. Between an 87 and 88, and maybe I'm Russian judging it. I'm going 87, but it's like Rob said, this is something, you know, if this is in your wheelhouse, you could drink this every day. I'm getting the Russian judge. I'm fine. I'm living with it.
A little chocolatey too.
I'm going to give it an 88. The chocolate has opened up. I'm giving it an 88. Yeah. Rob's right. Chocolate.
I'm giving it an 87, folks. But it's not wildly complex.
What a dick.
But I know. It's lovely. It's tasty. It's nice. It is one of those wines that is nice. It's nice.
It's tasty to us. That's another thing about this. It's not going to be everybody's thing.
Well, it isn't, but at the same time, if you've ever felt to be a little bit adventuresome, give us a try. I mean, you listen to a wine podcast where we make dick jokes. I mean, obviously, you're interested in something. Maybe just dick jokes. I don't know. I haven't made any dick jokes tonight, though. Scott, would you like to? I haven't
drawn any pictures. Yeah. You know, in a recent episode, the entire podcast, he was drawing male appendages and holding them up. And not just my face, but towards the triple B's as well.
Yep.
Many of them were tiny. Were funny angles.
How about that one? That one's very excited.
What is it attached to?
It's not. It's ejaculating, Scott. That's what that
I saw that, but the other part where it's what's that attached to? It's
That's the body.
That's a body?
Well, it's the taint. That would be the taint would be.
Jesus.
And there you go. I'm not an artist. Yeah, I'm doing my best, okay?
He's doing his best.
Don't judge my dick pics. Okay, it looks terrible.
So he's a silly man. He's drawing penises, and then he's offended when nobody
there.
Knows
I
what
drew
they
the
are.
I drew the torso. I'm gonna draw you, appalling. And it's gonna fall right on your face.
Your new wine rack's gonna fall. Becky's right. I was just kidding. Piece of shit. Rob's gonna not sleep tonight because earlier tonight Rebecca asked if it was gonna fall over and asked me to look at it, and I lied and said it was okay.
See, that's you, expert the dick.
Jesus,
that's terrible.
What is that, a crown? What is that?
That's your hair.
I don't have that much hair. My hair's thinning.
Well, then say thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Your tongue's sticking out, too. Well, you must be waiting for something.
That's not thinning.
So.
You make me feel brand new.
In 88 and 87. A lovely wine. I think it's very enjoyable.
I do love how that chocolate has just appeared. What, yes. This is an hour and a half in the decant? 2 hours? Yeah.
And a half.
Yeah.
This is going to get highly recommended, actually. Well, especially for the price point.
Yeah, if you can find it at the deal that I did.
$9.99? I would buy it. I would buy 2 or 3 bottles of this. I like it. It's one of those wines. It's not complicated. It's not. But it's one of those wines where you say, you know what? Friday night, I'm not going to cry if I open that, but I'm going to enjoy it. And you do it.
And, you know, maybe it's not an everyday drinker. I think Rob mentioned maybe we would like it for an everyday drinker. Not really, but it's just unique. So every once in a while you're like, oh, yeah,
Scott,
that.
You're drinking some jank shit. You're drinking Goats to Rome. You're drinking Goats to the Arena. Anything with a goat. Goat fucker. All that shit you're drinking.
Tempranillo.
You throw all that away. You just drink this.
Oh, no. Not every night. It is too unusual for every night.
It's not. No, those were unusual. Those are less common than this.
Hmm.
This, I think, is a lot more universally appealing than those wines. And it's a better wine, too, mind you. And I don't think this is that unusual. I think that people that go down those roads certainly would dink on this. I mean, if you drink White Zinfandel all the time, you're probably not going to enjoy it. But that's why I'm amazed that you drink it. But still, that's not the point. I mean, if you drink Riesling, no, you probably won't like this wine. But if you drink anything that's slightly funky. If you've ever had a Pinot Noir before didn't even like it, try this.
But the person who likes a funky Pinot Noir, you're going to love this.
Oh, sure. But I think that everyone should challenge themselves at $10 and try it.
Yep.
If you don't like it, you don't like it. If you
sue us.
No, don't sue us.
Yeah. We recommended it. If we were wrong, they should sue us. Isn't that the American way?
No.
That's what Trumpy would do.
No, this, Scott, this is the American way. Right there. See that?
Yeah.
You keep asking me to draw this stuff, so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why.
Rob's a porn star. He's not a porn star. Freaking nut job.
I think that's probably you and Hank's Vegas vacation. So, folks.
Jesus.
for Rob the Wine Guy, Scott the Lessons Taxi Driver, and nobody else, we're going to bid you adieu and see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.